You are listening to Window to the World, URN's International Affairs podcast. I'm Ibtissam Ahmed, a politics PhD student here at the university, and in each episode, I will be joined by a panel of students to discuss a different global issue. The discussion will be prefaced by a brief information package introducing the topic before going into a moderated chat with the panel. The impetus for our topic today came from a very personal space. I am from Bangladesh, and we have been struggling with a complex situation where voices speaking out in favour of secularism and rationality are being attacked and killed. On the 25th of April, four separate attacks led to five deaths as a part of a wider assault on rights and equality. However, the focus in the international media was on only one of the victims. Zulhas Mannan, the founder and editor of the country's only LGBTQ+ magazine, Rupban. While he was definitely targeted for his sexuality and his activism, the wider coverage seemed to imply that the only group at risk was the LGBTQ+ community. Of the remaining four victims on the day, only Zulhas' friend and colleague, Tonoy, killed in the same incident, received any mention at all. The priests who had been targeted for their religious denomination and the teacher for his cultural activism were not mentioned in any news reports. Similar attacks in previous weeks against academics and lecturers and a subsequent attack on a spiritual leader received a fraction of the coverage, if at all. As a result, the international conversation has ended up looking at a narrow LGBTQ+ focus. This, while being a legitimate concern, is only part of the wider debate. This oversimplification is a common recurrence in international news coverage. Understandably, the extent of coverage is dependent on locality. European stories would get more coverage in Europe due to the immediacy, for instance. But not engaging in nuance and letting expectations dictate who gets talked about is a great disservice to the issues at hand. Looking at cases around the world, including how the rhetoric of terrorism is used, the panel considers the issue of bias in reporting and its impact on society and politics. Due to the sensitive nature of the topics being discussed, the panelists' identities have remained anonymous. However, it is important to note that the panelists represent a wide range of nationalities present here at the university, so the outlook isn't just from a purely British perspective. The debate will include discussions of sensitive topics such as kidnappings, murder, and violence. We therefore urge you to listen at your own discretion. So to get things started, just posing this question, first of all, do we agree that there is a discrepancy in coverage? And by that I mean mainstream media coverage. I need to make that distinction because there's been an increasing understanding of the nuances on social media, particularly among student populations. But is there still a discrepancy in mainstream media coverage of who victims of religious extremism are worldwide?
I think, yes, there most definitely is. One of the most obvious examples, I think, out there is when you compare the coverage of terrorist attacks in Turkey, which happened around the same time as the attacks in Brussels. They got little to none coverage. People weren't really discussing it. There was no outcry of support for the people, I think, in Ankara, or even there were earlier attacks in Istanbul. And the attacks that were in Istanbul was because it was on German tourists. However, when it's Turkish people, people didn't seem so interested. And then you compare to Brussels or Paris, which was a massive, had such an impact, shook the world, silenced the whole world. There was such an outcry of support. People were setting up the Eiffel Tower and other landmarks in the colours of the flag. However, you don't see anyone doing that when it's not a big Western power. It's quite obvious, I think.
It's not so much that they don't cover these other stories, it's more the way that they cover them as well. So with Ankara, I think I remember seeing in the news in England, they would cover Ankara, but they would always mention at least one Briton was killed, or at least six Britons were involved. So it's not so much they're not covering it, although I do agree they're not covering it as much. It's also focusing those sorts of attacks back to Britain and back to Europe in general, I think.
I think also what's interesting is that these attacks in other non-Western countries aren't getting as much media coverage, but also the attacks in the West almost propel those into the media coverage, like after the Paris attacks and after the Brussels attacks. I know that people took to social media and sort of went, no, actually, this isn't just what's happening. Yes, these are atrocities, but actually, this has happened in other countries as well. And in a sense, I think that's sad in itself, in which it took massive attacks, and not even that much larger attacks than that happened in sort of other countries, but attacks in Western Europe, in order for people to go, actually, no, this has happened here, this has happened here, this has happened here as well. It took that for people to bring this into the spotlight as well.
I feel like it's also in terms of which kind of mainstream media you watch or you listen to, because I know that personally I watch a news broadcast from a French mainstream media, but they are centred around international news, so I clearly remember on the day of the Paris attack, just before they talked about the Beirut attack. But then it depends on which kind of channel, if you're more watching the BBC, or if like BBC World News, or if you're watching the channel that your grandparents will watch. And it's really also, it's not just mainstream media in themselves, but also which one you'll watch or listen to.
The way they report, it's almost, especially anything that happens in the Middle East, any disasters, any attacks on innocent people, it's almost kind of depicted as a routine thing. This has happened once again. It's almost shunned to the back because it happens so often that people don't consider it to be a major news story. However, when it happens in the Western world, it's got the shock factor, and because it's closer to home, it does get the reaction that you want. It does shock you. But I think the way that it's almost said routinely, as, by the way, this has happened in the Middle East, these so-and-so have been killed, it's kind of desensitized it.
Well, it's very rare that it's a like the front page news, isn't it? It's always kind of stapled on towards the end of a segment or end of a newspaper as well, I think.
I would slightly disagree with that, and I would say that actually some of these killings are front page news, but then it's always to do with ISIS, and it's to do with how many people ISIS have killed and all of this. So when a terrorist attacks in other countries do happen, it's always focused upon ISIS, and how it's almost at the same time it demonises Islam as well. It shows them to be brutes, whereas in Brussels and in Paris it was Islamic State, but then at the same time it was more sort of about the people who had died, people were focusing more upon that. However, when it happens in the Middle East and sort of in North Africa, it's much more focused upon ISIS as opposed to the people, whereas in Europe I would argue it's more focused upon the people.
That's a really interesting point. The way things that happened in Paris and Brussels, it was depicted as a tragedy. People focus on the sadness of it. But when it is not a Western power, you're right, it's depicted as an example of ISIS aggression rather than a tragedy.
I feel also that for that in particular, one of the main differences that you have between, let's take an example of an attack in Syria compared to Paris, is that the Western journalists will be there. So, for example, after the Paris attack, one of the main French newspaper published portrait of each of the victims, because it's easier because it's in France and they don't fear for their lives every day. Whereas you don't really necessarily have, in some of those countries, journalists on the ground that are able to do that. So, I mean, it's not a reason not to talk about those attacks or that kind of stuff, but it also kind of explains in some way why that happens and why it's less talked about.
ICE is obviously a global concern and something that has had ramifications for policy making as well. So I just want to focus on attacks carried out by ISIS for the moment. When we think about the length of time that they've been an influential player in the Middle East, particularly given the amount of time they had to be a destabilizing factor in Iraq and Syria. Something that has been mentioned a couple of times when criticisms of coverage have come up, and again, I mention this as social media criticism of coverage or individual op-eds being written by an occasional journalist who wants to critique how this coverage happens. It's important to remember that ISIS has been having this impact for a while now, and I remember when the coverage started happening due to the focus on journalists, particularly white journalists, or rather European journalists who'd been kidnapped by ISIS. That's kind of when it took off. And despite the fact the group had been creating problems and killing people in the region for a while, Now, I'm wondering whether there's a connection in how the group operates as well. Clearly, they want a lot of social media coverage. They've got their own Twitter account. They've even got strange Twitter accounts like Cats of ISIS that try to normalize their everyday life. And then, you know, they're not just terrorists going out and killing every day, which is such an awkward concept. But they're very clearly aware of the kind of media bias that does exist. And they know that they weren't in the spotlight until the journalist killings happened, for instance. Do we think that this kind of bias not only creates problems for perceptions of the people who are reading it, but also creates potential targets?
I would say that it was no accident that it was Western journalists who ISIS chose to kidnap. They could have chosen any journalist from the world, but they knew to get the attention that they probably wanted, they had to do something to make a statement against the West. Like, a lot of the time, the West is seen as the enemy. And to get that attention, they knew that they had to take people from the West, journalists who also are going to have ample access to the media, in order to get their point across. And it's interesting that this is how they have to do it, that we're not paying enough attention to Middle Eastern and African news in general in order to realise, oh, actually, there's this group which has sort of popped up, which is actually killing quite a few people. It's sad that the Western world isn't paying enough attention for them to notice that this is happening until something happens to them.
I feel like for this issue in particular, it's even more something that was done on ISIS side rather than the reverse, because I remember reading about the Syrian conflict from the very beginning and all the different groups. And before they did that, the thing is, the situation in Syria really is a mess, and you have ISIS, you have Jabhat al-Nusra, and you had so many groups that even the newspapers and magazines and radio, TV, radio, that were covering the conflict, the problem is it wasn't really clear who was the most dangerous, and that they use that as a way of saying, we are the main players, you should be talking about us because we are the dangerous ones.
They're definitely aware that by attacking Western individuals or Western places, that they will get the most media attention, and that it is sad that that is so true. But I think it's only been in very recently that ISIS it's almost become a buzzword. You only need to put that in your headline and you'll get people reading instantly. Everyone's aware of it, but it's only been because they've got coverage because of the attacks on the West. And I think they're very aware of that. It's almost a way of establishing themselves. That's the way to get everyone to know who they are, because that's the way to spread their name. It's sad, it really is.
And the reason it works is because people reading in European newspapers want to find out about stuff that affects them. If it's just something that's happening far away, they can just put it to the back of their minds, oh, it doesn't affect me. But if it's European people being killed, no matter where they are, if it's people they can associate with and relate to, they're just going to be thinking that it's scaremongering almost, because they're reading this and thinking, what, they're relating, they're thinking, well, this could happen to me. And that's why people read it, and that's why it's a more popular news story than something that they can think, oh, well, that doesn't matter to me.
And it's more effective terrorism, because they're using their social media. They don't even have to necessarily do any terror attacks. And one attack can cause such an amount of terror that it expands across the whole of Europe, because this news story creates this kind of sense of hysteria. And a lot of the time it's kind of paranoia. People suspect suspicions. And in that way, they're using social media, and they're using the way the West operates and the way Western media operates really effectively to create the maximum level of fear.
And I feel like, really, just to take a quick example with Boko Haram, that we talked about it because it was so massive, there were so many girls being kidnapped, but then after that, because they just stayed, and all of the victims really were people from the West African region, that we kind of stopped talking about it. But by doing this, ISIS can have a massive impact, and because they're doing it this month, and then the next month they're doing something else and something else and something else, with just even one person, one Western person, and the Western media are going to talk about it. So it's almost easier for them to do it and still have the media coverage than to kill a very big number of people to have the same media coverage.
What's interesting about those girls is that if you compare what has happened, so they've been largely forgotten about, but if you compare what the uproar would have been at, if that had been, I don't know, 30 English girls or 30 French girls or 30 Spanish girls, it would have been absolute media carnage.
You can see from one British girl in Madeleine McCann that's been going for 9 years, and this is, I mean, there's 600 girls, 600 times as bad, if you will, and that's been, well, completely forgotten. I can't remember the last time I've seen that in the papers, whether it's been resolved or not.
A quick interruption at this point. At the time of recording, the situation in Nigeria still hadn't been resolved. Despite being several years old, over 150 of the girls remain unaccounted for.
I was joking, it's interesting you bring up Madeleine McCann, because that has been going for so long, and then 600 girls disappear. It's seen as sad, and it's got forgotten about, because it hasn't got the same emotional pull it has someone who's Western, because I don't know whether people feel alienated, but we feel we can relate much more to someone from where we come to. And that's why newspapers are very aware of this. And they do say if a British person was on holiday and they were included, or they were one of the people that were one of the victims, they will always put that in the headline. Britain killed abroad.
And there is this us and them divide, which isn't right. At the end of the day, everybody's human. Everyone should care about everybody equally. But increasingly, like, you look at the worrying things that are going on in America with Trump and sort of the idea that they want all foreigners out. They want to build a wall around America. And it's just this idea that ever since really 9/11, it's been this idea that they're after us. They're after the West, which isn't the case at all. It's a small amount, a very small, small amount of extremists. But it's this idea that they're after us. And I think the fact that when it happens to the West, it's sort of like, oh, it's happened again. Why do they keep on doing this? Whereas actually, they're doing it to everybody. They're not just doing it to the West, but it's almost like the West is playing the victim, whereas actually, they're trying to make it seem like it's only happening here, where actually it's happening everywhere else. It's just not getting the same coverage.
And I feel like it's not simply when it happens to conflict-prone regions, because you've got so many countries in Africa that are now, they're developing, but they don't have war and they're democratic. But because of the lack of knowledge of people with regards to those democracies, those countries that are succeeding, that have good growth and that have no conflict and anything, and they still have attacks, but when we hear about it, we just think, oh, you know, it's a country in Africa, so it's normal, even when it's not a country, if it's a country that has been at peace for 25 years, because we simply don't know.
I think, but to put it from like a pragmatic point of view, it is hard to get as much, we are a Western country, it's hard to get as much coverage from places like Africa, and although it's sad, we are not up to date as we should be, but then you've got to think from a pragmatic point of view, people are going to be more interested in stories that are happening in the West. But you've hit the nail on the head, where there's not an idea of superiority, I don't know what it is, but there is very much an us and them, almost they live in a dangerous country, it is expected, it is therefore not a tragedy. If it is unexpected, it's a tragedy. If it's against someone, it shouldn't happen to. Somehow, it shouldn't be happening to a Westerner, we live in a safe part of the world. It's almost our own insecurities, because we feel we live in a very safe part of the world, and that's what's getting projected into news stories.
I think part of the problem is the British obsession with American news. We seem to follow everything that America puts out. We're immediately like a little puppy sometimes. We're like, oh yes, that must be important. America's talking about it. Let's go and jump on that. And I think from that, I think a lot of America's views are sort of almost leaking into other Western cultures as well. This obsession with sort of making sure that you're doing what America's doing, again, is leaking through and sort of alienating us more from the Middle East and Eastern countries as well.
I think there's also a bit of an issue in terms of access, because to get a news story from America, that's no problem. We've got BBC or any British tabloid or anyone in the media in Britain can have people stationed in America or have access to American sources. Whereas if something happens in, say, Central Africa, you're not going to have BBC reporter stationed there ready to get an interview or get all the information. So in terms of getting an engaging news story, which is ultimately what they want, or what most of the mainstream media want, they can access it better in Europe, where they can often speak the language, they have people who can get there within a number of hours, and can get the news much easier than in other far-flung places in the world.
It is a given that it's unavoidable that you're always going to have more stories focused on European, because, like you said, it's much easier. There are difficulties. Heather, I don't think that should provide almost an excuse for the way that we cover other stories, the way we do it almost like a backhand comment at the end of a new show, or it's not given enough prominence, or the way it's reported. I understand we can't have the same level of coverage, but maybe the way it's dealt with and... just rather than desensitising and making it seem like a routine thing, because that makes people think, oh, that happens there all the time. It just removes yourself from that situation. And that's what's happened a lot with the victims who are Muslim in particular. We have no kind of feel of sympathy, because we feel there's been such an attachment of ISIS with the Muslim community that we've almost been blinded. And like you said, a lot of American journalism does focus on the Islamic side of things rather than on it being a small group.
I feel to touch on the on not having journalists or people on the ground is that there's, for example, when there was all the Eurozone crisis in Greece, I remember some, they were talking about the media, and the reporter that was there was the same person that was interviewed on all channels. And in terms of journalists that are, for example, in Africa, I know that we if you look at some of the French radios have people on the ground in many, many different countries in Africa. So you have people on the ground, but they're simply not used as they could be used.
If there's a lack of demand or interest, I think, which we're very aware of, and we know what makes a good story. Western media know what makes a good story, and it's a story that hits at home, and it's a story that makes someone scared, or any emotion you can make them feel, and you can do that much easier when it is somewhere closer to you. That's just a basic fact. But I think you have to acknowledge that that's always going to be the case. There's always going to be a bigger focus on European stories, and that is unavoidable. However, like you said, there are people that aren't being used, and maybe just even continuing stories and not dropping them.
For pragmatic purposes, and it's something that has been raised a few times, it is perhaps unavoidable that Europe gets a bigger volume of the coverage. But I want to touch now on something that has been raised by a lot of you during this discussion, which is the nature of the coverage, not the length of it. Particularly with regards to terminology, just as a comparison, any attack that is carried out against a Western target, particularly against a white target, is almost immediately branded as terrorism. You can see this not only in large-scale attacks such as Brussels and Paris, which of course are by definition acts of terrorism, but even individual cases of violence, perhaps the most high-profile one being the murder of Lee Rigby, which was picked up by the Home Office as being an act of terrorism being carried out, which was the statement that was released by David Cameron and by Theresa May and subsequently taken up by the media. A similar term was used for the San Bernardo shootings in the United States, despite the fact that in terms of being the definition of a crime, it would fit more with regards to domestic terrorism or a mass shooting, as had been the case in several other tragedies across the United States last year. You compare that with atrocities carried out by Boko Haram in Nigeria. When they do get coverage, they're not branded as terrorism. They're branded as tragedies. They're branded as atrocities. The massacre of a village will be used in the headline, but the word terrorism doesn't come in. And I'm wondering why you think that is the case, and what kind of dynamic comes into play when that word is used.
I think terrorism has become most people associate it with terrorism from Islamic states or militant Islamic states. I remember I was talking to a friend, and I was talking about the IRA, and I used the word terrorist, and she said, they're not terrorists, they're Irish, they're not terrorists. She didn't understand the definition of terrorism, and that she completely associates that with the fact that they're Islamic militants. It's become so that's what we view it as. And we're very afraid to use that term. For example, if we're talking about Western power, I was reading recently, it was not in UK news, it was in Spanish news, about the rise of Islamophobic attacks in France. However, they didn't use the word terrorism, they didn't even use the word terror, they just said attacks.
or violence. Whereas if it had been a Muslim people that had been attacking people or people who maybe were associated with ISIS, we would not be afraid to use the word terrorist. I think it's become completely associated with the idea of an Islamic militant group.
And as a reverse, I remember reading about shootings in the US, and some of them were simply mass shootings, but some of them were terrorist attack. But because they're done by white people, they always said it's shooting, and the people killing will be said it, you know, it was because of mental illness. Whereas if it's a Muslim, Arab, Middle Eastern person, they won't even be a question. There won't be any case of mental illness or whatever they said for white people. It's just going to be terrorist, end of the story.
I think this might be partly because of the phrase war on terror, which has been attached to, it's focused directly at Islamic militants by the US, saying this war on terror, they are focusing on people that are responsible perhaps for the Twin Towers, people who are responsible for attacks on Brussels. The war on terror it's not a war on terror, it's a war on terror from Islamic militants. However, that's not added on the end. People just, I think that's got to be considered largely responsible, and that's used in the papers. It's used by politicians will quote saying this is part of the war on terror. It's actually become part of the political language almost, and the way that it's used in newspapers, you can't escape that association.
Well, it's not new that it's been picked up on that there's a difference in the way we linguistically define these sorts of things. Is like it's mass shootings for one event, which is often with white people on white people. Like I think Breivik and Columbine, it was all mass shootings, and they quickly were like focusing on the killer about mental health and focusing on that. And it's been picked up in social media that, oh, why is this not terrorism? Why is this a mass shooting? But it's not picked up in mainstream media, and I think that's the real issue, is that although people can see it, mainstream media stick to their buzzwords, and I think it is just a colour opinion because they can use these buzzwords like terrorism, and straight away that's just fear instilled in their reader, and ultimately, or audience rather, and ultimately that's what gets listeners and viewers and an audience.
What I think again is interesting is in America they have a problem with policemen using guns against black people, and often unarmed, innocent black people. Yet a lot of the time when you see that, especially in American media, that's just stated as an attack. It's not even stated as a racist attack. It's literally, oh yes, policemen attacked unarmed, innocent black youth in Alabama. And that, again, is complete media portrayal. Obviously in America that's sort of almost propaganda, in that, you know, it's our police force, we don't want to say anything too damning about them. But again, it's the idea that a lot of the time, it's sad, but the media portrays what they want to, and they do stick to their buzzwords, and they do stick to the end of the day what sells and what gets them headlines. And the fact that terrorism is associated with Islam, however wrong that is, that's what the media is going to continue to do, because that's what gets the headlines, and that's what gets people reading and listening and watching to various news channels.
I think it's really interesting you mentioned the situation with regards to black victims in the United States, because there is an inherent racist undertone to that. Perhaps the most pertinent examples to use there is how a shooting in the church congregation in South Carolina, and it was an exclusively black congregation carried out by a white man, the media coverage focused on how much stress the shooter had been under. They kind of focused a bit on his family life, saying, oh, we're really surprised he did this, we can't believe this. You compare that with Trayvon Martin being shot by white policemen, and one of the first things that came up is potential and completely uncorroborated links to gang violence. This despite the fact that since then it has come to light that Trayvon Martin was an honor student. He went to space camp. He was involved with a young NASA program. None of that was covered, again, in mainstream media, and we have been making this distinction. And I feel that that kind of racist undertone, although that is a very specific contextual one for the US, can be applied more widely to Arab victims of violence by Islamic State, South Asian victims of violence carried out by Islamic extremists, and recently there have been a spate of attacks against Bangladeshi bloggers, for instance, and yet the coverage of that doesn't seem to fall under the same umbrella. Whether it's a conscious one or not, there is a racist undertone to this as well.
I don't know whether this is going too far to say that's almost, there's almost seems to be a level of protectionism, especially when the police is involved. The media kind of goes to an effort to protect the police and their reputation. They like to portray things, like you said, with the black victim who was shot by white policemen. They instantly say, oh, gang violence. They try to justify the actions of the police. But on a larger scale, there's definitely, I think, the Western media has a role to play in the constant portrayal of America and Britain and France and Brussels as the global policeman, as moral standards for the rest of the world, as the good guys, and the Eastern world as people who need to look up to the West and who should look to the West for guidance.
I feel like it's two different points. The first one is that for example, news broadcast on main channels, it's not because they change the way they talk about attacks that less people are going to watch. So the fact that they do not use the right words or words that have, with racist undertone and all that kind of stuff, I feel it's really either laziness or a sort of racism on their part, because they're not trying to have clicks or whatever. So it's really only their fault, and there's no commercial thing with regards to which word to use. And the other thing about what you just said, it's not, I feel like the media is a big part of it, but it's also in terms of politician and how they react after something happens, and the massive things that happened after the attack, which of course France would react more to something that happens in Paris, but they also will react to the London attacks or to Madrid, and less to something that happened in Beirut.
It's interesting you say that, because I was actually personally almost angered by, after the French attacks, you got the option to change your profile picture to the French flag, which I think was a nice idea. However, that was never the option for any of the other attacks. That wasn't something that was put out there in the same way we decided to put monuments up in red, white and blue in our show of our sympathy and our solidarity with France and with other Western countries. However, that the same move isn't made, and it does give that impression that it's the West stand together no matter what.
From the political perspective, since that's something that has just been mentioned, what do we think about concerns regarding immigration and the refugee crisis? Because something that has been brought up several times by many mainstream political parties in Europe, mostly from the right and the far right, has been this concern of we need to stem the flow of refugees into Europe. And one of the points that has been raised is because there is the potential for militants to infiltrate Europe through these lines. What do we feel about this, first of all, as a concern, but second of all, even if it is a valid concern, what do we do about it?
So I've got just one quick point about that, is that, for example, the people went and prepared the attacks and then carried the attacks in Paris and in Brussels, all of them were either French or Belgian. And although some of them had been to Syria and came back with refugees, they could have found another way to go back to Europe because they were not refugees. And although they used this way into Europe, they could have found another way. And they were all French and Belgian, would have been born and raised in France or in Belgium. So I feel like there's something that we just simply do not talk about, or those right-wing parties simply choose to ignore, because ethnically they're not white.
We seem to be coming back to a problem of an us versus them, not only in terms of nationality, but in terms of religion and in terms of ethnicity. We've discussed the fact that there is a discrepancy in coverage. We've discussed the fact that this often extends to discrepancy in at least political rhetoric, if not in actual policy. Do we feel then that this discrimination is only carried out by a minority of groups? So like you said, the media and political parties, we seem to be unequivocally against this, but again, we are a very specific demographic as well. We are all students. From experience, do you think this is a much wider problem, or are people actually becoming aware of this?
I think people are becoming aware of this. Like you said, I think it's a generalisation, but the younger people get, the further you get down the generations, generally, the more liberal they tend to become. They tend to become more sort of open-minded. They tend to become more concerned about the world at large, mainly because the world is in such a state that they realise that you need to care about everybody. But increasingly, I think that is not just being students. I think more and more it's almost going into our parents' generation as well. They're sort of realizing that, especially people of our age, we're beginning to know what we're talking about. You know, we're not 15 year olds who've just seen one thing on the news and have decided to be a liberal. We've now forming our own ideas, and I think more and more that young people are talking about those ideas, it's seeping into other generations which they have contact with, and older generations, maybe not going into the oldest generations who are somewhat stuck in their ways, but definitely people who are middle-aged are very much sort of beginning to think along those lines as well, and being like, actually, no, something's wrong here as well.
I think the later you've been born, really, the more exposed you've been to these liberal, slightly liberal ideas, or just a generally more neutral portrayal of the news. I think in the past, like maybe 50 years ago, there was only one news source or two news sources, and you just had to take their word for it. But now, what with technology coming in, there's just so many avenues for you to get your news, and you can get it independently, you can get it in a neutral way and make your own decisions, whereas previously in older generations would just have to take the word of a trusted news reader in general. So I think the younger we're getting, or the more generations that come in after us, the less this is going to become a problem, and hopefully this media bias will slowly start to overturn, as I think it is starting to do so already.
I think the power of social media can't be ignored, and the fact that a lot of people I know, fellow students, do comment saying, oh, this hasn't been covered. People do. I see a lot of people sharing pages from independent news news stories and news websites, sharing things and saying this hasn't been mentioned in the BBC. There is definitely social media has, and sites like Reddit and other sites have, especially amongst the younger populations, are really starting to care for them. People are noticing, and people aren't afraid to say that, yes, there are discrepancies in our media coverage. However, I don't think people are making such a link to, we were talking about racist overtones and the ideas of the us and them. That's also, I think, that is still inherent in politics and in our politicians. They still are carrying this idea forward, and they are perpetuating the same things the media are perpetuating, is that the West are the global policemen, the East are the people that need to be policed. The idea, again, that a white person cannot a terrorist, and yet someone from the East is. I think politicians are just as much as guilty of that as the media, and people aren't starting to recognise that as much as they do the media. People are recognising that the media needs to change.
One of the things that needs really to happen in terms of politicians is that there needs to be a new generation coming, and not just always the same old that, seriously, I can't see anymore, because they're just always there. And that it's not simply the new generation to become more aware, it's also the new generation to become more involved in the news and the politics and everything.
Yeah, there's a point of change where we are a generation, we're equipped with social media, we're equipped with things that perhaps people in older generation don't recognize the power of. And I think things are getting stale, and you're right, there is a demand for a fresher take, and maybe people from our generation starting to step up to the plate and making changes.
At the end of the day, this is a complicated situation with many factors at play. But if there is one thing that we can agree on after the discussion, nuance isn't a bad thing. Unpicking the identities of whom we choose to portray as victims, as well as whom we choose to portray as perpetrators, is a very important thing to do. Stereotyping individuals and simplifying issues simply serves to undermine the debate. Including complexity in our discussions and actively engaging with things like media and politics is the right step forward. Thank you for listening to this episode of Window to the World. Join us again next time as we tackle yet another global issue. For now, it's goodbye.